Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hello and welcome back to Carolina Connections. This is Ann Revell-Petcher, your host. I'm here with my co-host today, Cal Hackman. Hey, Cal.
Good morning.
Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Love you in that co-host seat. It looks good on you.
It's great.
For the listening public, he looks good in the co-host seat. And Angie Hand, welcome back from the holiday.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Good to have you here. We have a very interesting show today. We have one of the region's most interesting startups, period. Actually, hardly even a startup anymore, getting past the startup phase. But we just have some really interesting things going on there, and we have one of the region's most influential banks for startups. So I want to introduce first Chris Stacker. He's with Silicon Valley Bank. He's the director of the Carolina region. Hey, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
Great. It's good
Thanks
to have
for
you.
Having me.
Oh, man. We're excited to talk to you. But before we get to talk to you, of course, we're going to talk to Russ Kanjorski. Russ is with Semprius. He's the vice president of business development. And Semprius is our go out on a limb here and say Semprius is probably North Carolina's most assertive, aggressive developer of solar technologies. How do you feel about that statement there, Russ?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly.
Oh, yeah, good. But it's not just about North Carolina. You guys are really a driving force for the whole world right now, aren't you?
Well, Semprius is an emerging solar company where we have a new technology, a different technology that is going about trying to get to the lowest cost of electricity in the world. And when I say that, we're not focused on the lowest cost of solar, but we really want to have costs that are below fossil fuels, coal, natural gas, oil, everything.
Wow. So what's it take to get there?
Well, the industry has made tremendous progress, the solar industry. It's grown, it's scaled, it's been using a traditional form of technology that's now heavily concentrated in China. So scale has been a big part of it, and I think most people aren't even aware of how cost competitive solar already is. We're talking about solar that a couple of years ago might have been 20, 25 cents a kilowatt hour to produce the electricity, now probably below 10 cents even without subsidies.
Wow.
So we have made tremendous progress. Now, Semprius specifically is taking a new technology that's very, very high efficiency. So your standard solar panels that you'd see on your roof might be 14 or 15% efficiency. Our solar panels are 35% efficiency.
Did I see you recently hit a huge number, even above 35?
Well, yeah, we have internal, and these are production modules that are coming off the production line. We have some
here in Henderson, right?
In Henderson, North Carolina.
Cool.
Yes,
very
that's
cool.
Right. And we have some next generation stuff that we're working on that it's all about the cell efficiency. So we have very tiny solar cells that are built into our modules. And the way we get them to be such high efficiency is we layer one cell on top of the other. And what we have had for in the past is three solar cells stacked on top of each other. That gives us a certain efficiency. We just, in cooperation with the University of Illinois, where our founder comes from, we were able to stack two sets of solar cells on, and now we're up to four.
Wow.
So that's pushed us into the mid 40% range. And we're confident that with that, over the next 3 or 4 years, we'll hit 50% solar cells and about 40% solar modules.
Tell us what it means when people are thinking about your efficiency levels. What?
Well, yeah, efficiency is good. It's interesting, but it's really all about cost. There's a couple things that drive the cost of solar. And and efficiency helps us cut the cost of certain things. So first of all, as we increase the efficiency, we get more watts out of a panel.
Sure.
Panels are made of steel and glass and wires. So that cuts the cost on a per watt basis of the solar module. But it also affects the cost of the rest of the system. So and our systems, unfortunately, are not used on residential rooftops. They require solar tracking. So we're more of a utility or commercial scale solution. But as you put in a solar park or a solar field, there's labor involved, there's wiring involved, there's land involved. All those costs go down the higher efficiency you are because you can fit more solar, you can install more solar for the same number of man hours, etc. So that's why we're after efficiency so much.
And that does drive down the cost in the long run.
In the long run, it drives, hopefully in the short run, it drives down the cost. It's a method to get there. So what the Chinese have done is massive scale. So they have gigantic factories. What we have currently is a small pilot scale facility where we're working on perfecting the technology and getting it to just unheard of efficiency numbers. And we're right at that inflection point now where we're going to be ramping up to a commercial scale. So right now we're producing in smaller scales, more for testing and demonstration purposes.
So where might somebody see one of your products in use here, and maybe here in North Carolina or somewhere nearby? Or,
well, what we've been doing is installing demonstration sites all around the world. We're in 8 countries right now and in 4 U.S. states. Mm. Our technology is best utilized in the U.S. in the Southwest.
Okay.
So
all
solar obviously does better where there's more sunlight, but in our case, we have lenses. I should have mentioned this. So part of our technology is that we concentrate the sun through a lens by a factor of 1,000 onto very, very small solar cells. So these cells are about the size that your pencil would make if you dotted a pen. So we're in Arizona, Colorado. We're getting ready to do a site later this year, a larger site at Edwards Air Force Base in California. We have installations in Spain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, China. And we're talking with some folks in Mexico and additional sites in Saudi Arabia. But again, these are all at the demonstration phase where we're doing 15 kilowatts, which might be 3 or 4 times what you put on your roof, to show that the technology works, to show, and not just the solar modules that we make, but the whole system, the trackers, the inverters, everything works to convince the customers that now we can go to megawatt and multi-megawatt and hopefully someday gigawatt scale.
Yeah.
So who are your customers?
Our customers are, we call them EPCs, or engineering, procurement, and construction companies, or developers. So a developer will go out and, just like a real estate developer, get land, get a power purchase agreement with a utility, and then hire an EPC to build it, and then they'll be doing a technology selection, usually based on what's going to make them the most money. But not always. Sometimes it's what's the most reliable, or what fits in the parcel of land I have, or what's the best suited for this region of the country or the world. So there's a lot of factors going in, but in the bottom line, everyone's going for driving toward the lowest cost of solar electricity, but over a period of 20 or 25 years.
You alluded to this earlier, but try if you can. You've got a good marketing sense. Try to describe what your panels look like.
Our panels are 2 feet by 1.5 feet, each individual panel. They're about 2.5 inches thick. And inside, and it's got a printed circuit board that's inside the panel. So just a standard piece of copper with some traces. And what we do, we mount very small, I mentioned these small, tiny solar cells about the size of the head of a pin. We mount them on that printed circuit board in a fashion very similar to the way that a computer or a cell phone is made. In fact, that's one of the benefits of our approach. We're trying to leverage the electronics industry and the semiconductor industry and apply it to solar rather than creating something from scratch. That is just too expensive, too risky. So we're trying to leverage existing technologies. And then on the front, so it's a little steel box, and that's about 2 inches thick, like I said, with a piece of glass on top. And then on the inside of that glass, it actually looks like a bath mat. It's a piece of silicone that's in the shape of lenses that do the concentration. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that worked for you.
Yeah,
Anne,
that was good. Being probably the only person in the room, maybe besides Chris, who's seen this thing, they are very, very cool. So I do recommend everybody goes to the website and takes a look at what they look like and how they're made, because it's just a completely different approach. It's not the solar you see on a roof, so it's not going to look like that.
No, and I might add, as a way to save myself a little bit of time when I get back to the office, we do, when we get publicity or things come out, like, for example, we were recently featured in Nature magazine or Nature Materials, which is a scientific journal, talking about these 4-junction solar cells, which is novel and unique in the industry. We get a lot of people saying, hey, as soon as they're ready for residential applications, let me know. And unfortunately, I have to say, unless you're willing to put a tracker on the roof, which really wouldn't look good, and I doubt your homeowners association would allow it, we're not serving that part of the market.
Well, give us a sense of where, I mean, I know Cal asked this earlier, but specifically where you had mentioned, I think earlier last year, that you had an installation in a test or an entrepreneurial facility in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one for us because it's at a place called SolarTech, and it's very close to the Denver airport, and it's an industry grouping of interested companies. For example, XL Energy, which is a large utility out there, and there are others that have come together and funded this test site. Okay. And so they wanted to do a test of emerging new technologies that are very interesting. And one of the things that they looked at was what's our part of the market, which is called concentrated PV or concentrated photovoltaics. So they established a test program to test a number of different technologies, and we were selected and installed with one of our partners, which is Aerojet Rocketdyne. So oh, cool. They actually installed the system. We provided the modules, and that's been under test since about August, September timeframe. And in fact, there is a YouTube video of the motion capture of the tracker for 3 or 4 days of performance. But I can say we're very happy with that site. It's gone very well. And the nice thing is there are a bunch of these customers, not just from the U.S., but globally, that are part of, that are sort of the funders and the recipients of the test data.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting to watch under very carefully controlled circumstances how our product works.
Russ, I can just sense the enthusiasm that you have to this. How did you get into this?
Well, I've been in the solar industry for 7 years now. I've been at Semprius for almost 3 years, and I came on board right after a large round of funding. We have one of our investors is Siemens, so they got involved in the company back in 2011 with the idea that we're going to take it out of the R&D mode, which it was in 2011, and start commercializing it. So I had been in the solar industry for 4 years at a different company out in Colorado, and when I got the recruiter's call and I spoke with our CEO, Joe Carr, and heard the story behind this technology, I thought, wow, this really has a chance to be something special. And every startup company, every emerging company goes through a lot of struggles. It's not easy. I don't care how great the technology is. You're going to run into challenges. But this was one that, in my mind, was worth spending a serious portion of my life to try to get it out of the lab and into the market where it could be picked up in a lot of different places and hopefully make a difference.
Yeah. So how is it being in North Carolina? This is not your target installation market.
No. However, it's a good place to be situated from a business perspective, from an employee perspective, a lot of the research that goes on here. What a solar cell is a semiconductor, and it's a lot like an LED. In fact, uh-huh. If you shade part of our solar panel, the part that's not shaded will start glowing red. That's sort of it. It's operating like an LED in reverse as the current goes through reverse. So a solar cell captures the photons and makes electrons. An LED, you pump in electrons, and it glows photons.
Yeah.
They work just in the opposite. So as I'm sure you're aware with Cree and a lot of other semiconductor and LED companies, we have a lot of core technology here and technologists that can help a small company.
Yeah.
So this company was founded in, I think, late 2006 in Illinois, but then moved here with our CEO, and this was a perfect place for it.
Yeah, and you've had great support from the state in terms of building the Henderson facility and the like.
Absolutely, yes. This was a little bit before my time, but in late 2010 and into 2011, as a decision was being made inside the company, where are we going to locate the pilot production facility? The state was extremely supportive from the state, county, and city level throughout Henderson, and that's an area of economic challenge. So there was an ability to get some incentives and to help defray part of the cost, not all of it, or
right.
not even a majority portion, but
sure.
A part of the cost to help us ramp that up and create some jobs up in Vance County.
So let's talk just a minute about customers.
Mm-hmm.
You've got installations all over the world. How did you find those customers?
Give us that business development insight.
Yeah,
there, Russ.
You don't have to give away your secret sauce, but
no.
You know, how do you do it?
Well, I'd like to say that's what they pay me the big bucks for, but seriously,
you can say that.
The solar industry is actually fairly small. I mean, when you get down to the level of thousands of installers throughout our country and other mm-hmm. countries, it's large. But when you're talking about utility scale or large scale solar, There's a finite number of companies that are doing that, and we've by no means touched all of them, but there's relationships that you build over a period of time. There's the credibility of the technology. There's, I think, a sense, and even in places you might not think, so I've mentioned China a couple times, which is really the king of the current technology. Everybody's looking for the next new thing, and when they see some of these numbers like 35% efficiency, and that's just the beginning, and when they see these small solar cells, nobody's ever heard of that type of technology. We have gotten interest from all around the world, and so we really just, some of the stuff has come just through our website. Other stuff has come from relationships that we've had. And then we do things like I mentioned, the solar tech installation, where that puts us in front of a bunch of customers with the potential to follow up as we just demonstrate the technology.
Sure.
So if somebody's listening to this right now and they think they have a great application, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can come to our website. We have, first of all, you could call us. I'm sure we're in the book, although don't ask me what our number is right now. I have to
it's
think
It's fine. It'll be on the website.
But our website, I do know that one, www.semprius.com. And in the contact link there, you can just write a little note. It actually comes into my email. So we try to get back to people as quickly as we can. But like I said, we're not, unfortunately, not going to be able to help people that think it would be cool to have these on their roof. So commercial businesses and more utility scale, larger scale, 1 megawatt, 5 megawatt type sites would be of keen interest. I should mention we're just ramping up, so we're sold out with our customer commitments through 2014, but we are looking
bad
at the 2015 possibilities.
Fantastic. That's great to hear.
Thanks, Russ. We're going to come back and chat with you in just
Thank
a minute.
Thank you very much.
But we're going to talk about how companies like Semprius get their feet on the ground financially a little bit here and get Chris Stacker back into the conversation here. Tell us a little bit about Silicon Valley Bank.
So we are a bank for the innovation economy, which is where Semprius is.
Smack dab in the middle.
Smack dab in the middle. So our core mission is to increase the innovative company's probability of success worldwide. So my mission is here in the Carolinas, but as a bank, you know, worldwide, because we do have offices located around the globe.
Like in Silicon Valley.
Well, that's where the bank was started,
sure.
And we have a huge presence there, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. But we are located, and I think we have 27 offices here in the U.S.
Oh.
And we also have an office in the U.K. Mm-hmm. Actually, SVB U.K. has its own banking license, which is unique for U.S. banks. And we also have a joint venture in China. It was with the, it's called SPD, Silicon Valley Bank. It's with Shanghai Pudong Development Bank. And that happened over the last couple years,
okay.
Which is also unique for U.S. banks going into China. It's joint venture. It's actually 50-50, which is.
So Silicon Valley Bank is not like other banks that we see driving down the street.
No, we are not. We are
so
very different.
Do you have in these locations, do people come to visit you and deposit checks, or how does this work?
If they do, they don't get very far. We have one
no
office.
Tellers.
No
tellers. Teller free
no.
zone.
It's a commercial office in the Research Triangle Park, on the fifth floor in a building, random building in the middle of the park. But we have had people try to do that before, and We're always wary when we have people show up at our door because I think they think that we may have some cash, but we don't. So we actually only have one branch for the bank, or maybe we have two, and they're both located in California.
Okay.
But we're a commercial bank. We have no retail operation.
Okay.
It's purely commercial, and again, we're focused on working with innovative companies, which, you know, innovative companies in our view are, you know, technology and life science, technology being hardware and software and clean tech. Life sciences, device, and biotech.
So, you know, a lot of us are still kind of wrapping our heads around that. We understand commercial banks, but still most commercial banks have a certain set of service offerings. You guys have a very kind of different set of service offerings. Yes, you can have payroll for your employees, right? But there are other things you do. I mean, you really focus on helping the companies more than just being a bank transaction kind of.
We do. We try to be partners along the way. So we get involved with these companies at a very early stage. Oftentimes, we don't always. And in those situations, we can be helpful in networking, making introductions, whether it's to investors or CPAs or attorneys if they don't already have those folks in place.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a, you know, Our underwriting is a bit different from other banks. We like the fact that these companies have technology and they're, you know, what a traditional bank will see, what they'll view as asset-light companies, we actually really like that. We like the fact that they have IP. We see the value in that. And so, you know, we're not equity.
Right.
Right?
We are debt. You're not investing.
We're not investing. But yeah.
So at what stage is a company appropriate? I mean, very, very early stage. They don't have any money to put into a bank, right? So what stage are they ready?
So we have, you know, companies that are two guys in a garage that are, you know, just formed last week, and they, you know, everybody needs a checking account, right?
Yeah, sure.
And unless they really want to walk into a branch, then we're a great option. You know, we have mobile deposit, and you know, most of these tech companies, you know, are cashless anyways, so that's not an issue. Right. So that's, you know, that's the earliest stage, right? But on the loan side, it varies. It really varies. If they're pre-revenue, they will need to have raised some equity financing from some institutional investors.
Sure.
But in that scenario, we can lend money pre-revenue, which other banks won't necessarily consider.
I see.
So talk a little bit about that, Chris, because, you know, that's something that a lot of innovative entrepreneurs, you know, I don't think really get.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, I know a little bit about your story. So, you know, I know how you invest with the venture capitalist or whatever, but just talk a little bit about, you know, how that's done. And
yeah, give us an example maybe.
Yeah. So let's say a local software company raises $10 million from a two or three syndicate, you know,
go software company.
Right.
These days, 10 mil, let's take it.
Well, let's say they're, you know, they want to put those monies towards marketing, right? They really want to go after the market.
Right.
That's right.
PR and marketing is where it should go.
That's true for you. So they may want to layer in some debt alongside that equity to help extend the runway, because these companies are typically burning cash, right?
Right.
So
right.
Let's say that $10 million lasts them, you know, 18 months. They may want to layer a couple million dollars of debt alongside that to reduce the dilution to the founders.
Sure.
Extend the runway of the company, of the business, before they have to raise a more than likely follow-on financing or they reach cash flow positive.
So I've heard companies announce that they have closed on debt funding. How is that different than what you do? Or is it the same thing? It's just a different way to put it.
Yes. Yes.
They got a loan.
Let's be realistic. They got a loan. It is debt. We do like to be repaid. But in those scenarios where the company's pre-revenue, a lot of times our loans will come along. Well, the pricing will be higher than you might see at a more traditional bank.
Oh, sure.
Not substantially, but it would be more. And then there may be some warrants involved where there's a little equity upside for us potentially down the road.
But the one of the key things, as you mentioned, is that this is a way to reduce the dilution to the founders.
Correct.
Because you are debt.
Correct.
And it's not as expensive from an equity standpoint, right? As pure venture capital, which is very expensive financing, but it's very risky financing, so it needs to be expensive.
Correct. And to the investors, it can be valuable as well, because it can extend the runway again, and before they have to raise the follow-on round, potentially, hopefully the valuation, the business has gone up, and if they bring in a new investor, they retain more of the ownership as well.
So let's talk about how do companies find you, and how do you find companies? So, you know, you must have a tremendous network of relationships and whatever. How does that all work?
Yeah, it's like anything else. It's just having your own personal network, whether it's with attorneys, CPAs, investors. The bank itself, I'll tell you, is really good at it. We get calls from people in California or New England, and hey, I know a guy who just moved to your area and he's starting a company, or he was a CFO of a client company of mine here in Boston, and he's relocating to Wilmington or Raleigh, and he's just joined this exciting company. If you don't know them, let me introduce you. So honestly, SVB has a great network, and we leverage that quite a bit.
It's pretty much all referral sources for you guys.
It's a lot. Yeah. It really is.
You have a lot of repeat customers?
Yes.
A lot of serial entrepreneurs?
That is quite a bit of our business. A lot of time, you know, it is a CFO or a CEO that's exited their last company.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
are banking operations different with a company like with a bank like yours in terms of how it works on the back end? Is it all pretty much the same kind of thing that happens?
No, we are a normal bank, right?
Really?
So of all of our clients, probably only a third of our clients borrow from us. The others just do their day-to-day banking, treasury management, investments with us. So, you know, I think where we're different is we're very high touch on the service side, and we always get really strong marks on the service side.
And in North Carolina specifically, I mean, obviously you bring certain values to the table, but your team is really strong and very invested in the group here.
It is. It is. I have Pat Shepard, who works with me, has been in this market for a number of years, and he lives in Durham. I live in Raleigh, and we also have an associate in our office named Christian Ebert, who recently moved from our Boston office to join us down here to help our efforts.
Can you talk a little bit about the non-startup clients that you have? I know Silicon Valley Bank is known for, you know, as you say, banking the innovation industry, and you know, people think of that as being startups, but obviously startups don't stay startups forever.
Right.
And
we
hope they don't. And in fact, we know they don't.
Right.
Because, you know, the US economy wouldn't be what it is today if startups didn't grow into major companies. So talk a little bit about, you know, the other end of the spectrum where you're, you know, working with companies that are no longer in the startup phase.
Yeah, so we have a large book of our business here are public companies, you know, again, innovative companies. So whether it's tech or life science, you know, our market in general had a great year last year in the public markets, off to a decent start this year as well. So that's actually a large piece of our book of business here. Our larger, more established companies doing, you know, 50 to 100 million in revenue, and we're able to, you know, we're large enough. We're roughly the 50th largest bank in the country. Out of the 8,000 banks.
Really?
Yeah, shocking, I know.
Yep.
People that probably haven't heard of us, right? We're a sizable bank, and again, we focus solely on innovation. And
well, that hyper-targeting, you know, it works for entrepreneurs the way it works for banks, I'm assuming.
Yes, it's been great for us, where a lot of banks, you know, the last 5 years have had their, you know, ups and downs. You know, we, of course, had ours initially when, you know, when times got bad, but we have really had a good run, and a lot of that's to the types of companies we work with.
So a public company obviously has different needs than a startup.
Yes.
What are you typically doing for a public company who is, you know, really most public companies have no shortage of cash.
Right.
In fact, they have excess cash, right? At least you know, they have excess cash for some period of time after they do their IPO or do their secondary or whatever. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, again, we can handle any of their needs, whether it's international or you know, domestic. But with a company that has tons of cash, we have an asset management group that is one of the best around as far as managing their cash. Liquidity and capital preservation are the most important thing for any technology company and certainly any public company. Mm. So
absolutely.
You do not want to have a day of disruption to your cash or access to your cash. So we have roughly $26 billion of on-balance sheet deposits, which are not the asset, which are not with our asset management group. And then we have our asset management group, which also managed another $26, $27 billion, I believe. So we, you know, last year when the IPO market was really hot,
and again,
it's been okay this year, we garnered, I can't remember, it was a north of 50% of the tech and life science companies that went public, we, you know, those funds flowed through into SVB's asset management group. And we're a trusted partner there, and the investors know us. And
I was going to say, you work closely with venture capitalists, too, and other institutional investors.
Right. So we have a great reputation there.
Yeah.
So you want to talk a little bit about the value that the bank in the UK and the bank in China bring to your local customers?
Yeah. So most of our companies here are, you know, using our UK bank as a beachhead to work in the rest of the EU. And we have connections just like we have here. We have them there as well. We've had an office over there for 10 plus years. But now that we actually have a full service bank over there on ground, we can actually accept their deposits there. We're obviously lending money over there as well. But having just making connections, I think, is one of the best things that we do. And we do lend money a little differently than others as well. But you know, in the UK, that's been a huge help to our companies. And in China, you know, just like Simpri, you know, a lot of people are in China, right? And navigating the Chinese waters are not easy necessarily. Yeah. And again, that's where we have a huge presence over there now with the JV. and our former CEO, Ken Wilcox, is over there. He moved over there 3 years ago to really get the joint venture done.
Wow,
yeah, he stepped down as the CEO of the bank. Yeah, it was a huge deal. And our former chief credit officer, Dave Jones, is also over there. Now he's the president of the bank over there. So it's exciting times over there.
Is it Hong Kong?
They are in Shanghai and Beijing.
That's right. That's right. Oh, both. Yeah.
So what's next?
So what's next for
the bank?
I remember 10 years ago when you opened the office in the UK.
Right.
You know, that was a big deal. You've since, you know, done the JV in China. I mean, you are innovative in the way that you serve innovative companies.
Yep.
So any insights into what's coming next?
Yeah. So, I think we're definitely focused internationally. We're not going to lose focus here at home. But I think we have a huge growth potential overseas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we're looking at, you know, the BRIC countries and just kind of seeing what's going on over there. We're not going to have not going to have an office there anytime soon. But
not next week.
But we want to know what's happening in these countries where technology is also happening.
Yeah.
So
yep.
We're spending some time there. You know, here at home, you know, we're tracking how payments are getting done very closely, because that can be a disruption to us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we are that's an area where we're focused on actually quite heavily.
You guys following the digital currency changes?
We're actually one of the, when Bitcoin is discussed, you know, we are brought in quite heavily to opine on it, I believe. And don't ask me, that is not my area of expertise at all.
Yeah.
What about new technologies that our listeners might not really even be aware of? You have any insights there that you would be willing to share?
I don't want to speak to that, Cal.
Okay. All right.
Got to keep something secret, you know?
Okay.
Well, so if a company is looking for a new partner in their banker, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can go to the website, which is svb.com. I am on the website, and again, I'm the director of the Carolinas. We have offices, you know, East Coast, middle of the country, as well as the West. And there's actually separate website entries on the site where you can actually visit each office and email the office directly.
Okay, cool. Great. Yeah. Thank you. Before I let both of you go, I'd love to hear both of your comments, some insights from you, if you have any, on the state of entrepreneurship in North Carolina. Tell me what you're thinking. What do you see? You're feeling like it's a warm and nurturing environment for entrepreneurs. Is it growing? Are we getting a little bit nervous? What's going on?
Well, from my perspective, speaking from Semperis's point of view, certainly this has got to be one of the top three or four places in the country where you can start a new technology-based company. And say that for some of the resources like SVB being here, but also the local venture capital community.
Mm-hmm.
InterSouth Partners, for example, is an investor in our company. So they're kind of they're a leading, Southeast leading venture capital firm, very, very large amount of capital under management. So there is that ecosystem, if you will. And then this isn't relevant really for Semperis because we have our own office space, but some of these incubator spaces and whatnot, these are available for folks who are just getting started.
Yeah, you're actually in one. The Wireless Research Center has a commercialization center on the other side where they're just bringing in all sorts of wireless-related startups. So, yeah, that's anywhere you go, you can find an incubator these days in the Raleigh-Durham area, right?
There's no lack of.
Yeah. And are you seeing anything? What are you seeing? Activity?
We're seeing great activity.
Yeah?
Yes, we are. In Raleigh and Durham and Wilmington.
Wilmington's really getting hot, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And Charlotte actually as well. And
everybody watch out for Next Glass. It's going to just take the world by storm.
Yep.
I'll tell you that straight up.
We saw those guys the other day.
Yeah, going in tomorrow.
Yep. But the Carolinas in general. I know this is a North Carolina specific, but we're seeing activity in Charleston, Greenville, again, Charlotte. It's been great to see. It really has been. Innovation can happen anywhere, and that is happening.
Yeah, and I think the more we work together, I know that some of the work being done at CED is taking a look at how North Carolina is different from some of the Southeast, but, you know, looking at it as a big picture, I think that we're going to see some interesting things in the next little while.
Yep, I would agree.
And specific to solar, now we mentioned before that Semperis is not necessarily focused on North Carolina as an end market for the technology. That's specific to what we're doing, but solar in general in North Carolina has taken off like gangbusters.
Has it?
Yes. I think, I'm not sure if North Carolina is number two or number three, definitely in the top five in terms of states in the U.S. where installations are going in.
Are you kidding?
And it's got a very vibrant utility scale, sort of 5 megawatt, 1 to 5 megawatt, even up to 20 megawatt structure. So it's been supported well by the state. I hope, hopefully that continues, because we're, you know, the incentives and the government support has been being scaled back on a metered basis, which is good. The market's grown, the manufacturing base has grown, costs have come down, but still having that bridge of support has been helpful. So, of course, California leads the country by a mile. But then you look at other states, and Arizona had been leading, but now some areas where you wouldn't have thought, North Carolina, Massachusetts, New York, have put in good regimes that are allowing the business community to get going. And when that happens, they're not all manufacturing jobs. In fact, most of them aren't, but there's a lot of installation jobs and developer jobs that come up out of that, and those can't be outsourced. So they're really, somebody needs to put it on your roof in the state.
That's right. That's pretty cool.
I'd like to add something, just as you did the disclaimer with the residential. We work with innovative companies. They don't have to be venture-backed. I think that's important to point out, because the bank has historically, when the bank was founded 30-plus years ago, that's the initial market that we went after. But in order to grow, we love innovation, so we number of our clients are not venture-backed. So that is a
but they have access to some form of capital.
Well, not necessarily. No, they have to have revenue.
Okay, revenue.
Right.
Okay,
so if there's
family and friends is capital, right?
Well, if there's no, you know, we like to see, meaningful revenue, 3 to 5 million, in a non-venture backed profile company.
Okay.
But again, they're doing something different. They don't have to have venture capital for us to work with them. So I think that's something
I should mention. That's another whole show, by the way.
Okay.
how to build a company without venture capital.
Right.
There you go.
It can be done.
It
the old-fashioned way with revenue.
Absolutely. Right. All right. This has been a really fun show, you guys. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you having on, and we hope you come back and see us again.
Great. Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
And this is Anne Revell Petcher and Cal Hackman and Angie Hand saying goodbye for Business Radio X Carolina Connections. Until next time.